Our first reading today is from the Old Testament, Exodus, chapter 1. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, "Look, the Israelite people are more numerous and more powerful than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, or they will increase, and in the event of war, join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land." Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to oppress them with forced labour. They built supply cities, Pithom and Ramses, for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread, so that the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. The Egyptians became ruthless in imposing tasks on the Israelites, and they made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick and in every kind of field labour. They were ruthless in all the tasks that they imposed on them. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shipra and the other Pua, "When you act as midwives to the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stool, if it is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, she shall live." But the midwives feared God. They did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, "Why have you done this and allowed the boys to live?" The midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife comes to them." So God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very strong. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, "Every boy that is born to the Hebrews you shall throw into the Nile, but you shall let every girl live." Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a fine baby, she hid him 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and plastered it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds on the bank of the river. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river while her attendants walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid to bring it in. When she opened it, she saw the child. He was crying, and she took pity on him. "This must be one of the Hebrews' children," she said. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Yes." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child and nurse it for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed it. When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter and she took him as her son. She named him Moses because, she said, "I drew him out of the water." And our second reading is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 16. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. And this is the word of the Lord.
It was a pit in the pit of the stomach moment. It was grade 7. And I was sitting behind Ruth, who had long plaits. And there was an inkwell which I didn't dip her pigtails into, but I was caught talking, and the teacher beckoned me to the front. It was in the pit of the stomach that I went out and put out my hand with his ruler, got 6 cuts. Yes, that was in grade 7. And I've had other in the pit of the stomach moments as well. When I went to Kent Town, in those days Methodist Church, for the ordination of about a dozen of us. And one in those days got up and gave their little testimony as to your call to the ministry. And when, with the name Purling, of course, alphabetical order, the others had gone first, and, you know, in the pit of the stomach. And I reckon that's how Puah and Shifa felt when the order came that they were to kill the baby boys. They defied that order. I salute them. They said, "We follow God." And when an explanation was demanded, "Well, Your Majesty, you know, these Hebrew women, they give birth pretty quick, you know. Before they can get to the phone and ring us up as midwives, it's done. The baby's born. Too late." You see, the scripture tells us a new king came to the throne, as it were, in Egypt, who didn't know Joseph. Well, the story that we've been hearing over the last few weeks tells us how come Joseph and co were in Egypt. Jacob and his 12 sons arrived there eventually and settled because of economic necessity, because of famine, because they shared with their fellow Egyptians. They settled in Goshen, which was on the edge, a kind of a perimeter town, a perimeter place. And got on well. But the new Pharaoh didn't know the story. He hadn't been told the history. And he could see the threat of the multiplication that was going on amongst the Hebrews. They were breeding well. And Pharaoh was just a little concerned that they might in fact become a threat. Hence plan number one was to dispose of the males before they could breed. And as that wasn't working because of these defiant young women as midwives, then Plan B had to come into operation. That is, to dispose of the boys when they were born. Hence the story brings us to Moses and the saving of Moses, and hence becoming the liberator of the Hebrews. Now the word Hebrew, Habiru, actually means foreigner. And eventually the Pharaoh saw the usefulness to which he could put these Habiru. So he, where they had been in a place where they were at home and were well off, they suddenly became slaves. And it's understood by commentators that the buildings that Ramses put in place were built by the Habiru as slave labour. And so Moses, and I think one of the sweetest little verses there is the princess that spies the basket and orders the slave girl to bring it to her. She opens it. The baby's crying. And she took pity on him. I mean, that's the heart. It's also an act of defiance. She took the baby and hid him in the palace. So we have a number of women who are standing up for what is right and defying the power of the empire. Egypt was a colossal empire. And here we have these people, midwives, princess, who defy and stand up to the empire. So Moses is hidden and escapes death. Now, where have I heard a story something like that before? Hey, Bethlehem, Egypt, so the story goes. And we have one Jesus. Now, we have this story, and I think it's great the way these stories are linked today. The story of Moses and the story of Jesus. But Jesus is a grown man, and he asks, who do people say I am? Now, imagine the scene. The disciples are used to going with Jesus on journeys. They're used to being probably a bit out of breath, because his favourite spot is a mountain. So he climbs up, Moriata, and they have to follow him up to the third falls. And they're out of breath. And he looks around, he says, now, who do people say I am? Well, actually, I don't know if he said it like that. Who do people say I am? Who do people say I am? I wonder if at that moment he didn't really know. There were so many demands on Jesus, both from within the disciple group and outside. Read the gospel stories and you see Jesus is always on the move and there are people making demands. Here I have a sick child. Here my lad has epilepsy. Here, here, here. Do something, do something. Here the crowds are hungry. Feed them. And the disciples made demands on him as well. Did Jesus ask a genuine question? Not a rhetorical question, but who do you say I am? If that's not a in the pit of the stomach feeling, I don't know what is. As Jesus looked, where were their eyes? I guess, well, what do you mean, who are you? You're Jesus of Nazareth. Well, some people are saying, you know, like John the Baptist come back, or Elijah, or Jeremiah, these great figures. you're like them. And then he looks in the eyes of maybe Peter. But who do you say I am? Now, Peter hadn't been to theology school. Peter hadn't studied the philosophers. Peter was a fisher. And what he said, Jesus' response was, now your textbooks haven't told you that, grace, grace, it's grace that gave that answer. For what did Peter really say? You're the one we've been waiting for, the one who really shows us who God is. And through that, we have seen God. And what was Jesus' response? You're a rock, Peter. Thanks for that. And on that kind of statement, I'll build a church. And that church is so important. I'm giving you a job to do, as Lucy and Chris reminded us. A really important job to do. So here we have two stories. One about defiance, about standing up for what's right, and a story that really is about establishing an alternative kingdom. Here is the kingdom of the world, Egypt, powerful, mighty, able to dispose of children at will, and a few voices that say no. Here we have the power of the might of Rome. And Jesus is saying we need this alternative, the church. Over the years that I've been more aware of politics than I ever was growing up, I've been aware of various figures in politics telling the church to keep quiet. It's got nothing to do with the church. But the church cannot, in following this commission of Jesus, be silent. Next Sunday, we're holding a Welcome to Australia party because we see the power of politics saying, go home, we're full. We must take a stand like Shifra and Pua, like the princess, like Jesus asking, who do you say I am? And then simply says to those who respond, follow me. Follow me.